Morning, all. I'm Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. What an honor it is to be on top of the mountain. I always love coming here, and to be asked to be on the program is just a special bonus. On top of that, to have speakers such as Craig and Walt and Teresa on the same program, this has just been an absolutely amazing weekend for me. I'm going to start with my sobriety date, which is August. Lost a couple months there. August 28th, 1990. And my buddy Dirk will remind everybody that he's got about 10 months more than I do, so that he's so much more spiritual than I am. I'm from Atlanta. My home group is the Lowburn Third Tradition Group in Lowburn, Georgia. We meet on Mondays and Saturdays at 8 o'clock p.m. If you're ever on the east side of Atlanta, we would love to have you. One of the things that I love about my home group is the amount of sobriety. We have something like 7 or 8 elders who have over 30 years of sobriety, and it's just, it's amazing to gain the experience, strength, and hope at every one of my home group meetings. So I thought I'd tell you a little bit about my heritage. I come from a Scottish background, and I was thinking about a story that I heard about one of my cousins one time. Now, he would go into the Scottish pub every day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He would sit down, he would order 3 beers, and drink those 3 beers and leave. So, you know, he went in every day, and finally the bartender got curious. He came over and he said, "You know what? You always come in every day at the same time. You always order 3 beers. What's the significance?" He goes, "Well, see, my brothers and I, we grew up together and we're very close. One brother moved to England, the other's in the United States. So we agreed to meet at the same time every day and have a beer together." The bartender thought, "Wow, that's pretty cool." So this went on for a while, and one day the man comes in, sits down, and he orders 2 beers. The bartender brings him over and says, "I'm sorry for your loss." And the man said, "I'm sorry, I'm a little confused." He goes, "Well, you always order 3 beers, and today you ordered 2. I assumed one of your brothers passed away." He goes, "Oh, no, I understand your confusion. Now, what happened is I quit drinking." All right, with that aside, as I said, my sobriety date is August 28, 1990. And I was thinking about where I wanted to start today. And we were having a discussion this morning, and it came up, and I realized that Bill wrote a one-paragraph summary of my story in the big book. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. I'm sure nobody in here can relate to that. But to tell you where I came from, I grew up a very fearful child. I was born in a little town in Michigan. That's the other thing I wanted to point out. Thanks for my book in Michigan with Craig. I grew up in a small town in Michigan, and from as far back as I can remember, I was filled with fear. Mother would take me to church every Sunday, and every Sunday, Mrs. Woods would come up and say, "Good morning, Jeff." At which point, I would run behind my mother's legs and hide. I probably, I'm surprised she didn't faint when the morning that I finally said good morning back to her. But that's where I was. I was a fearful child. I can't give you any reason why. I had loving parents. Effectively, I grew up in a single parent home. My mother was always there. My father was gone, selling whatever to whoever. And I found out later, having some extracurricular activities of his own. But I grew up in a loving household. I didn't see evidence of alcoholism. And so I don't know where all of this came from, of course. I grew up the youngest of five. I was significantly younger than my brother, who was number four. And so when I grew up, I kind of grew up as an only child and the youngest child. People want to say, "Oh, you're the baby." No, I'm the youngest. But it was my mother and I, and we got along pretty well. I had everything I needed, as the other speakers have stated this morning. Did not really want for anything. Incredibly shy, but that goes along with the fear. My first drink of alcohol came somewhere between the ages of 6 and 8. I was over visiting a friend who was a few years older. He suggested that we go break into the refrigerator, grab a couple beers, grab a couple cigarettes, and sneak out behind the shed. Great idea. Like some people would say that their alcoholism took off from there. Mine didn't. I was a good kid for a while. I would have an occasional beer when it was given to me, but I really didn't go out and party. I was an athlete, participated in most sports, and I just didn't drink a lot in high school until my senior year. When the opportunity presented itself to get out and go to parties and break my mother's one rule: if you're going to drink, do it at home, don't drive. Of course, I was always the designated driver, and I would take my buddies around and we'd go have a good time. Getting out of high school, I went away to a college about 40, 50 miles away, and was staying in the dorms there. The bar in the local mall would allow you in at the age of 18, and from there it was no problem to get beer. So I started my pattern on Friday night and Saturday night, which went to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which eventually turned into 7 days a week. I think I lasted 2 quarters there when I decided, it was probably a better idea for me to go to California. Education was free. I had a sister out there, and I went and I moved. I moved in with my sister and her family, and spent the next 6 years terrorizing her and her children. My first DUI, which by the way wasn't my fault. I'd gotten home late one morning, and apparently decided to go sleepwalking. Drove my car through a school fence. I thank God today that at 7 o'clock in the morning, that was a Saturday morning, and that there were no kids there. Took down 60 feet of that fence, and so all of my DUIs had a story. A few years later, I was out at a gentleman's club with a buddy of mine, and we left about half an hour after I was supposed to be at work. So I was properly berating him because, again, not my fault, it was his. And in the process of doing that, I looked up too late and saw a red light, locked up the brakes and right in front of a police officer. He thought that was probable cause. I collected one final DUI while I was in California, and that one kind of interfered with my plans. My plans were to move to New York, upgrade my job and change the process again. You might notice a pattern here. Geographical cures, and I don't make minor geographical cures. So I got to New York. I left my DUI outstanding and thought, well, you know, that's there. I won't have to deal with that. About a year later, I was up in New Jersey, and my sister called. She said that she got a visit from a couple of my best friends at the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Department, and that they felt like they needed to come by and pay me a visit. So she called and let me know that, and when I called, they said, no, you're fine. Stay in New Jersey. We won't have a problem. But if you come here, we're going to lock you up. So that went on for a while, but I noticed at this point that I had some events going on in my life. Things were happening to people around me, and that started to get my attention. When your boss stops you in the stairway and says, maybe you should consider going to Alcoholics Anonymous, might take that as a hint. By this time, I had made some calls and was working on my legal proceedings, and I'd gotten my license in New Jersey and had it subsequently taken away after they realized that I wasn't supposed to have one. And I thought that Alcoholics Anonymous was a good place to go. Not to get sober. I had no intention of getting sober and staying sober. I didn't want to know you people. But this it started in July of 1990. I attended my first meeting in New Jersey. I showed up, people were coming up, shaking my hand, smiling, and nice to know you. I remember the topic that night was the importance of going to meetings. And Craig, do you want to tell them what I said when they got around to me? I'm too busy. I was an important guy, you know. So I went to meetings when it was convenient for a few weeks. In between times when it wasn't convenient, I usually had an opportunity to go out with my friends. My friends who didn't have a problem brought a few beers along. So I would always participate and usually wound up pretty well lit by the end of the night. After my last time out with my buddies, I realized that, you know, I had come into the program, I was going to quit drinking for a year. This is my plan. We'll get into God's plan later. But I was going to quit drinking for a year, and, you know, in the couple months that I had been coming around, I wasn't doing such a good job. And this started to bother me. Now, I can't tell you how many meetings I went to. It wasn't many prior to this. But I finally decided to walk into a meeting and get honest. I said, I just can't see not drinking for the rest of my life. And I can remember the woman's face across the table from me, quite vividly even today. She said, you don't have to quit drinking for the rest of your life. Like Bob just shared, it's one day at a time. Can't tell you if that was ever said in a meeting that I had attended previously. It doesn't matter. That night, I heard it. Now, just to be clear, I need to come to meetings. Those steps on the wall, those are for the sick people. I don't need those. So I continued on with my program of self-will. And that went along fine for a few months. About 4 months, I decided I was feeling a little bit squirrely, and I was at that point where I either needed to go drink or I needed to do something. So getting a sponsor seemed like the least possible step that I could take to keep moving forward, so I got a sponsor. What's his first question? What step are you on? One. And that went on. I found the God of my understanding in the same way. A few months later, again, I was at a point where I needed to drink, or I needed to find some help. And I hit my knees, and I got the relief I needed from the God of my understanding. See, I walked into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous believing in God, but to my way of thinking, God hadn't done anything for me lately. So there was no point in reaching out and making that conscious contact. But at 7 months, I did. And as time went on, the more I came to meetings, the more I heard, and the more I realized I needed to be here. I should back up a little bit and say, in November of that year, I didn't have a license, couldn't drive. The meeting that I went to was about 2 miles away, walking distance. I didn't need to ask anybody for help. Again, my program is Self-Will. Around November, it started getting a little bit cool. So I became a little willing to ask somebody for a ride. And I obviously asked the wrong person, because when that person dropped me off that night, as I was getting out, he said, "Pick you up tomorrow." And that went on for several months. I remember John, and I'm grateful to John because he got me to all those meetings that I wasn't getting to. And he got me to those places where I started hearing what I needed to hear. Not coincidentally, I was working in a my company's office was in a hotel building, which housed several companies, and there was one lady who would always go down to the lobby and smoke cigarettes. Well, I ran into her at some point along the way, and I'd seen her in meetings. I went down and I would chat with her from time to time. So I had that contact at work as well. And before I knew it, 6 months had passed, 9 months had passed. Finally, I was celebrating a year. Now, if you remember, my goal, my plan, was to quit drinking for 1 year. Well, God's plan was a little bit different. Still didn't have my license, still didn't have those legal matters resolved. I did have to take a vacation when I was about 9 months sober and go out to California and spend a week at their local county facility. I didn't get to get out and see family while I was there, but I got that part dealt with. But the legal process was a little bit slower, and I made my year, and I kept going to meetings, and I wanted to keep going to meetings. I can't tell you that I'd worked any steps to this point, but I had been in communication with my office in Atlanta, and was planning to move down there. Long story short, I celebrated a year at the end of August in 1991. In December, I transferred down to Atlanta, and I got my license back in January. February 3rd, I just gotten back from lunch, and my uncle called. He said, "You need to get home." My mother had been She'd had cancer for some time, and when my uncle called, I knew that he was absolutely serious. She was in the hospital, and she would not come out of the hospital. I dropped everything at work. I got home, got packed. I think the elapsed time was about 35 minutes for me to leave work and get on the road. I didn't see my mother alive again, but as I mentioned, God's plan. God had everything worked out just perfectly. I got my license back a month before I absolutely needed it, and I was able to get home and at least say goodbye. Just thinking about the trip up to her hometown. Had my license back for a month and got my first speeding ticket along the way. But that's another story for another day. So buried my mother in February, buried my father in October that same year. And my mother's sister passed away a day after she did. So, 1992 was a bit of a rough year. But what it did is it made me reach out more and more to the people in this program. I started getting, as both Craig and Walt had talked about, in the center of the program, in the center of the herd. And I let the people around me help me walk through. You know, by this time, I'd been willing to and had done the steps of the program and had started getting in the center of this fellowship, started actually getting sober. As time went on, Tony mentioned that we met in 1993. He was dating the girl that I wanted to date, so I wasn't real happy about that. But in retrospect, thank you. But I got to work with Tony on the IKIPA conference in 1994, and so many other wonderful people who I call friends today. I think about the people that have gone before me and who have been there along my path. People that I wouldn't have expected. One time I was participating in a specific character defect that I wasn't feeling really, really good about. I went to a meeting and apparently I was wearing my shame and my discomfort all over my face. And I can remember another member of this program who we worked with on the committee. He came up and said, "If what you're doing is makes you uncomfortable, let the last time be the last time." What a concept. I don't have to sit and I don't have to kick myself over what I've done. I can call that a learning experience and I can move forward. Make my amends where I need to and move on. That's part of the healing process for myself. Let's see, in 1997, I met her. I was at at another roundup, and the woman I was to marry walked in the door, and we began a rather tumultuous year-long relationship before getting married, and spent 4 years together before we called that quits. And you know, I spent a lot of time in that relationship blaming her for the things that were going wrong. I spent a lot of time in that relationship blaming her son. Her son was 8 years old when we got married. And if he would only do it this way, if he would only do this. And, you know, I had to come to realize that that child was being a child. So was I, but, you know, that's beside the point. That child was being a child. That child was doing what he was taught to do. And so that gave me an entirely different perspective. Something else I was thinking about over the last few days is that, you know, I think the world looks at things as in terms of good and bad. And I'll be honest, I do the same thing. You know, well, this is not good, but this is good. You know, I lost my parents, bad. I have $1,000 in the bank, good. You know, what I've learned through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that good and bad is a label that I put on things. Good is usually when I'm getting my way. Bad is usually when I'm not getting my way. So it's, if I look at it in terms of that, it's things are very simple. They are what they are. I got divorced in 2002, and again, something bad. My job went away that same year. She decided to move out in March. My job ended in May. Divorce was final in November. When my job ended in May, I struggled through the remainder of the year until I was absolutely out of money and called my uncle in Huntsville and said, "I'm done." He said, "Come on over." Here I am. I'm 39 years old, and I'm having to move in with a family relative. That's bad. That is so bad. I've been self-supporting throughout my entire drinking career, throughout the ups and the downs, but I've always managed to make it on my own. And now I'm having to move in with a relative. How humiliating is that? A couple good things that have come out of that, my friendship with Dirk and Johanna, and eventually Andrew. But, you know, I got to Huntsville, and, you know, I assumed the role of the errand boy, and I get my uncle to his doctor's appointments and everything. A couple months after I got there, we found out that he had a lump in his lung. And so for the next year and a half, I had the privilege of taking care of a man who I had respected greatly in my life. Somebody who, you know, he and I didn't always see eye to eye, but he was always there for me, and I'm eternally grateful to that. But I got to help care for him until the day that he passed away. So, you know, again, I'm thinking in terms of good and bad, and God had me right where I needed to be. See, I don't always like God's terms. But if I stick around long enough, I'm probably going to learn something from the events that I have to go through. So, I'm not sure when I started, but I did want to spend some time and talk about what's been going on more recently. So about 2.5 weeks ago, I'm at work. I finished my 10:30 meeting early and was kind of walking around and being social, and I noticed that there's a sharp pain in my back. I wasn't sure exactly what it was, but I'm thinking, you know, I think I just probably need to get to the chiropractor and get that worked out. A short while later, I started feeling nauseous and started sweating profusely. Finally made it back to my desk, and I asked somebody for help because I was in such pain, I didn't know what to do. The short version of this story has me on a table in the cath lab, where I'm having a heart attack, and that they're working they're working to remove all the clots from my blood vessels. In total, well, I'll just say that the doctor came in a little bit later and he said, "Yeah, we pulled a big old bag of clots out of you." And I said, "Well, you're exaggerating, right?" He goes, "Not really." In total, they pulled out 166 cc's of clots from my blood vessels. I think about that and think about the fact that I am standing here today. I'm able to communicate this message and how grateful the fact that I am able to do that, because God only knows how close we came to having a different speaker this morning. I'm very, very grateful to be here. I also had to let go of a year-long relationship, and so there have been a lot of things that have been going on. But in the end, I have nothing to complain about today. Again, I'm on this side of the dirt. So I guess God is not quite done with me yet. And I want to talk about one more thing, and then I'll close. On May 2nd, the Daily Reflections, it says, "Cling to the thought that in God's hand, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life, the happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them." And the contributor wrote, "No longer is my past an autobiography. It is a reference book to be taken down, opened, and shared. Today, as I report for duty, the most wonderful picture comes through. For though this day be dark, as some days must be, the stars will shine even brighter later. My witness that they do shine will be called for in the very near future. All my past will this day be a part of me, because it is not the key, it is the key, not the lock." And I read that and I think, for all of the events that I've gone through in my life and in my sobriety, these are just things. These are things that happen. But all of these things don't have to define me. If I was drunk up here today, I would be telling you about how bad my heart attack was and how bad you should feel for me. Today, it happened. I'm grateful to be here. So that's, that's just something that I have to remember for myself. Life is going to go on. God has bigger plans for me. I don't know what those plans are. He hasn't revealed all of those to me yet. But when the time is right, they will be revealed. And all I have to do is keep trudging this road of happy destiny, stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and be grateful one day at a time. So, with that, I'll pass.